You're welcome back. Charlie on Facebook said, should women not carry a small alarm box or arm strap if they're going out on their own in places like Derry? This is off the back of our conversation in the first hour, and perhaps many do. Maybe they should, but that doesn't get to the root cause of the problem. Why should women have to? Why do they feel so unsafe? Why are there so many attacks, violent sexual attacks against women in Derry lately? And not exclusively there, but I suppose that would be... That would be a security element, but it doesn't get to the root cause of why the problems exist. Something completely different here. Hi, Greg. Would you please read out the following as a thank you at some stage during your show? I was rescued from Mount Errigal on the 10th of September. I want to thank sincerely Seamus, a fellow climber, who was first to assist me. Donegal Mountain Rescue and Coast Guard Rescue 118, led by Colin. Collectively, they were incredible and so prompt in responding to the call. Their treatment of myself, my husband and daughter was so professional and compassionate. Without their response, I would never have been able to descend Mount Errigal to be treated for my injuries, and for this I'm truly grateful. The ambulance staff who met us off Rescue 118, Laura and Enda, and the staff at LUH cared for me so well. While my injuries were not life-threatening, the care I received was wonderful. Many thanks again to all these amazing people. That comes in from Assumpta. Now, I know a lot of people don't refer to the mountain as Mount Errigal, but Assumpta did, and it's her story, and there you go. We had Mary Lou McDonald on the show on Friday, and because of the time constraints, didn't get to all of the comments, so I'll catch up on a couple of those right now, seeing as you took the time to text in. Good morning, Greg. It's the first time in over 100 years where there is no political solution available to the problems happening in Ireland right now. The majority of genuine Irish people now are of the view that they have absolutely zero political representation, but they're afraid to openly say it for fear of expressing their genuine opinion is being instilled by the media establishment. Another, Mary Lou McDonald, is interested in the local man on the street or Irish people, especially with what's happened in the referendum. I'm not sure if that's a question or a statement. When the going gets rough, Sinn Féin get going. Not to be seen 7 months. Can't see Sinn Féin TDs. They're too busy chasing votes in the office, not the little man on the street. Your party ship people to the polling station. Well, that's a kind of a all political parties will assist people in getting to the polling station. But I do understand where you're coming from to get their votes. They don't know Donegal exists. Donegal TDs forget the minute you get the people's votes. North Dublin have got the measure of your party, how you betray working people. Wow, Mary Lou McDonald just convinced me to vote Sinn Féin. Powerful leader, unlike Harris. We need a change of government. Donegal has been left behind as a result of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, says that listener. Sinn Féin need to be given a chance to deliver their mandate for a better future. There is no alternative, I believe, in change. If Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael get in again, we only have ourselves to blame for agreeing to live with a substandard health, housing and MICA redress scheme. That's their opinion there. And one request just before a break. Could you please say a happy 11th birthday to Seamus O'Neill in Creasla. Lots of love for mum, daddy's brother Joseph and sisters Clodagh and Maria. Now maybe Seamus is in school, but that will be available on the podcast if you want to play it back to him. Or maybe he's off, I'm not really quite sure. Now we're joined on the programme by Dr. Richard Curran, broadcaster, author and journalist. Good morning to you, Richard. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Greg. Good morning to you.
Great to have you on the programme. And you are, I believe, for the first time delivering the Allingham Lecture on AI, which will look at the promise and the perils of AI. And obviously, AI, an area of expertise for you. Before we talk about, you know, the thrust of what you'll be saying, not to ruin it for anyone that will be there. AI, it's there already, okay? I mean, it's there whether you know it's there or not. So it's part of our future. It's part of our presence. What are the promises and the perils?
Yeah, I think the debate around it has been very, very positive from business people and the corporate world, because they see a tremendous opportunity where they'll be able to use AI in their companies to increase productivity, increase efficiency, use new technologies to come up with new products, and they feel they will have better, more profitable businesses as a result of that. Outside of business, there's a lot of positive sort of stuff around health, New medical discoveries, new medicines that can be used to do all of those things. Climate change, it could be used to develop new technology for growing food more efficiently. All these kind of things that, in theory anyway, should enhance our lives. On the other hand, there's a whole other school of thought when you read about AI where people are warning about the computers and the machines are going to take over. It's going to lead to a nuclear war. They will actually effectively run the planet. Humans will become subservient to them. And it's all a sort of an apocalyptic vision. For me, I think if we focus on the negative apocalyptic thing, I'm not so sure that's the way it'll play out. And if you're too positive about it, there's a very strong chance that the debate will miss something that is more likely to happen and that we really have to prepare for. And that's the impact on work and jobs.
And I think, too, what's terribly important on this issue, and I believe in all issues as well, is that people think for themselves and explore some of these ideas. Listen to someone like you, for example, presenting both arguments, because more and more so we believe that we're thinking freely. But what we do is we tend to find one, two or three people that we trust their opinion and really, for the most part, allow them to think for us. But I think in the likes of AI and, as I say, in other areas of life, be they political or otherwise, it really is important that we it's not hard to drill in and find different views and opinions and form your own opinion in this matter.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a quote that I like which says that if you can get people to think that they're thinking, they'll love you for it. But if you can get them to actually think, they'll hate you for it. Because very often we want to hear what we want to hear. And we're becoming, I think, as a society, more inclined towards that and more reluctant to listen to and seek out information that might actually challenge our point of view. So with the AI, the question is, does AI help that or enhance that? And as a piece of technology, it has huge potential. But look at smartphones, Greg, you know, like smartphones came along and you have a huge amount of the factual knowledge of humanity on a phone in your pocket. And, you know, we're looking at celebrity gossip or having a go at each other on Twitter. So are we actually really learning from that technology? And AI could actually multiply that phenomenon even more.
Yeah, but it doesn't help when, you know, one of the most powerful people in that world uses that power to their own ends. And I'm talking about Elon Musk here. So, when you have someone who owns that company that is using it, as I say, as their own tool, it you can see why it can be damaging. What about how quickly or slow we are actually, really, is the question, to sort of talk about teaching AI in school. Very quickly, it was about, you know, oh, well, there could be homework being done by AI and this, that and the other. But I wonder, has the Department of Education, for example, says, well, how are we going to integrate teaching about AI into the school system? Because that's clearly the place to start these conversations, the next generation.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. I think that we have been very slow to do that, and not necessarily slower than other countries. There's a sort of a blind spot about this. So, for example, if you take school, whether it's primary school or secondary school, at the moment, AI, particularly for secondary school, is sufficiently advanced that people can use it to cheat. So basically, you get a project, write something about the 1916 rising, and bang, off they go and they present it. The school system and teachers themselves have not been trained or equipped to be able to recognize and identify that. They can probably have a fair guess, but it's a tricky area. And if you want to change that and you want to sort of reinvent the way that we think and the way that we educate our children in light of what's going to happen with AI, it will take time. But AI is moving much more quickly. At third level, there's a little bit more scope for individual universities or colleges to have their own policy. So, for example, I wrote something about this and I spoke to some colleges and I said, what are you doing about AI cheating, for example, people who just get the machine to write their project? And in some cases, the university has a policy where they equip the lecturers with a piece of software that is able to recognize AI generated stuff. It's not perfect, but I'm told it can help. Others have a much more relaxed attitude, which is more about saying, well, we don't want to stifle people from using AI if it's going to be a huge part of our lives. Mm. So that sort of thing has to be worked out. We need to sort of have a more strict and clear plan as to what we want and how we're going to do it. And one example of that, Greg, this thing is so radical in what it might do. If you imagine that you can speak into a phone today and it will speak out the other side of the phone in a different language that you require for language purposes. You can type up something on your phone or on a laptop, and not only will it finish your sentences for you, but it will actually correct your grammar. So we then have to ask ourselves, if all of this knowledge is at our fingertips, why are we investing so much time in our education system getting people to learn off stuff, learn off all of these facts? Would we not be better to get them and teach them to try and question, assess, analyze, weigh up these facts rather than just learn off stuff that is readily available to everyone?
Yeah, and this is only my view, it's not a fact, but in relation to, say, for instance, politics and even the media to some extent, we don't debate a point as such and then come to some sort of a conclusion or what have you. It's almost like a battle for the truth. So it's how you present what you're saying is the truth. And often one side's truth is so far removed from the other that there can never be a meeting of minds or some middle ground. And now with artificial intelligence being able to sort of create documents, create voices, create imagery, and we're only really seeing the free stuff here, you know, like me, a regular sort of consumer, and it's already so advanced it's crazy as to what it can be done. That's a concern for me into the future. You know, what will politics look like and how will AI influence that? And also in terms of media and journalism, unfortunately, journalism, good journalists have almost started a race to the bottom. Do you know what I mean? Rather than sort of resisting and maybe taking the high moral ground, saying, well, we're going to have to get down and dirty here really to sell our papers or to get clicks on our articles. So what role does AI play, I suppose, in, and I'm going to connect the two of them, you know, political conversations into the future and, you know, media and what is the truth and what's reliable?
Well, we've already seen from British and American elections and increasingly in Ireland, the influence that social media can have. As AI develops, you will have even greater scope for misinformation and disinformation. There's two ways of tackling it. One is through regulation. Introducing and enforcing regulation is cumbersome and slow, but we have to do it, but it takes time. And the other really is to go back to the education question, and it's about teaching people to seriously question stuff. But I'm firmly of the view before the AI debate that as a society, we sort of don't value factual knowledge the way we used to. So if you were out in the pub, Greg, and you go out with a couple of friends and one of them in a conversation about movies or films is able to name the last 10 Oscar winners of the best movie category, we all used to go, wow, geez, that guy really knows his stuff. That's impressive. But if we all have those 10 things on a phone in our pocket, inevitably then what's happened is, as a society, we increasingly value the quality of people's opinions over their knowledge of facts. Mm. So factual knowledge has been diminished somewhat in its value socially. And it's all about the quality. So you say some guy's down the pub and he's got this fascinating opinion about Donald Trump or about climate change or about whatever it is. And you say, I'm really impressed with that guy. Jeez, I didn't know Johnny had such good opinions. And this is where, if opinion is the new currency instead of fact, it's not a healthy development. And I think it could accelerate with AI.
People can hear far more from you during your presentation at the Allingham Festival weekend. An interesting topic and I think and obviously someone who's very knowledgeable about it. So when and where are you speaking, Richard, for those who might want to hear more?
Yeah, the Allingham Festival kicks off on Wednesday. I'm on in Theatre One of the Abbey Arts Centre in Ballyshannon. And I'm on at 8 o'clock. The festival actually begins with a bit of music at 7. And then there are all kinds of events running right through until Sunday. So it's a very full programme. I'd encourage people to check it out. But I'm Wednesday evening at 8 o'clock.
Yeah. All right, brilliant stuff. Thank you so very much indeed. Really appreciate your time. Dr. Richard Curran there. He's a broadcaster, an author and a journalist. Any views? 086 60 20. Excuse me. 086 60 25,000. On the Ballyholy to Ballinalecky Road, heading from Lifford to Letterkenny, there should be a barrier on the left-hand side going into Letterkenny. There is a dangerous banking where cars could easily slide off the road. Men have been working on this road for a while now. There should be a barrier, believes a listener. It's my understanding there's been 2 sexual assaults in Letterkenny in recent times as well, Greg. Okay, well, that's something that we'll obviously we have covered and we'll dig into there. As I said, there was a particular focus on Derry, but that doesn't mean Derry is particularly dangerous compared to everywhere else, and I think the audience generally would get that. Until after the murder of Ashley Murphy, most of us weren't aware that women are on alert while out walking or jogging and conscious of their surroundings. There may well be a link to all of this and the bad side of the internet. I get where you're coming from, but I think most women would already have sort of been aware of that. Do you know what I mean? Like maybe to guys or what have you, or different sections of the population, you become aware of things after high profile and shocking events. But I would say it's probably for a lot of women a lived experience all of the time. That's the lived reality. The speed van sits at the gates of the secondary school in Carndonagh, trying to catch some person coming from the shops. There's never been anyone injured here from a collision. They're never going to catch the boy racers. They've declared the scene of the worst collision in the country to no longer be a dangerous area and to not ploy a speed van there anymore. It is definitely a money racket. I don't mind seeing these outside schools, to be honest with you. I'm not familiar with the layout of the road here, just off the top of my head. I like to see them at schools, though, because I think people fly past schools, but I don't know what the situation is in Carndonagh. But anyone else out there, do you welcome it being there? Do you agree with that listener that it's just a money-making racket? Let me know. Just to announce something, the Kieran McGrath Memorial Table Quiz, it's happening tomorrow, the 5th of November at 9 p.m. It's at the Station House in Letterkenny, I believe that is. All proceeds going towards Pieterhouse and Sheephaven Search and Recovery. It's €10 ahead and all are welcome. If you like a quiz and like to support a good cause, well, then there you are. It's always good to see party leaders visiting Donegal, says a listener. As an affected defective block homeowner, it would be positive to get some questions answered. Starting a journey demolishing my own home, I found so many issues arising and keen to see how this subject area is progressed by all groups and parties in the future. It would be appreciated if the people could see what Sinn Féin deem end-to-end in 100% redress should they be totally successful in the coming election. What is their 100% redress commitment in detail? There is a book on the proposed housing strategy. Is there a full document on their draft 100% redress scheme? Questions 1. Does their proposal for defective block remediation budget cover a turnkey experience with an evaluation of the property like for like? And will it use the current science to replace foundations to demolish where appropriate? 2. Who will administer their scheme when established? Will it be the housing agency taking charge of this or the local council? Next question. What time frame do they expect to get this rolled out, given they are successful, if they are successful at the election, with possible further suspensions on the current scheme to a new scheme? In other words, will there be a smooth transition? And the last question, will Sinn Féin affirm a commitment to adapt alternative buildings to live in, modular homes, providing realistic financial measures to ensure people are not out of money, as demonstrated to date with the other flawed and failed attempts at schemes? Okay, some important questions there, and maybe resonate with quite a few of you out there. Back in studio with me, Katie McGee, who's no longer with us here, as you know, because Katie moved on to become active age coordinator with Cara House, and quick change. You're back already,
I know,
but with a completely different hat on.
I know. That's what I was saying to the girls. I felt like I should just kind of get going on one of the computers, and I'm not gone very long, so to be fair.
But that being said, you didn't hang about either at Cara House. And one of the things that you're working on at the moment is looking for volunteers for a befriending service. So what is this service all about? Is it up and running at the moment and it's about extending it, or is this a new initiative?
It's absolutely about extending it. This has been in place for about the last 8 years now. Obviously with COVID, that put a huge pause on it, and it's kind of slowed down since in terms of volunteers and people's knowledge about the service and that kind of thing. So we really are trying to expand on it and revamp it, I suppose. Now more than ever, people actually really need this service, you know.
Yeah. And I suppose there's a couple of things going on here. Firstly, in terms of volunteerism and what have you, people's lives changed during COVID, and maybe they had less time, or they took something else on, or, you know, things pitter out for them as well. But also to a lot of people's, and not least older people's, networks disappeared.
Yes.
And for everyone, not for everyone, did they return.
Indeed.
So there are still people very much feeling the hangover of COVID, I presume, in terms of isolation and loneliness, and maybe, you know, not having a emotional support structure there.
Absolutely. And I think it may have been a big enough thing as well over COVID and that kind of thing for people to actually move away from the country, or certainly straight afterwards. But the other side of it is, I noticed as well in my own family circle that people reevaluated what was important in life and that kind of thing, and they became a little bit more aware of their own communities and what's around them and their own families. So I'm sort of hoping that with that in mind, that people will kind of embrace this volunteer opportunity with the befriending service and kind of really get into the spirit of their own community, I suppose.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll talk about the benefits for both the volunteer and the recipient of that service too. But I think this all feeds into keeping people happy and well in their own homes for longer as well.
100%.
You know, having that external contact and what have you. And that's important because that's where people are happiest when they're happy, mm-hmm. but also where people have the most fulfilling life is in their own home.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. It's all about connection. And feeling connected to other people. And I think that ultimately gives any individual who might be feeling vulnerable a little bit of confidence in themselves, a confidence and in their ability to kind of stay where they are and stay in the surroundings that they're familiar with. And yeah, 100%. That ultimately is what it's about. And it's also, I can't express Sorry.
But you can't express the point clear enough.
This is true. I'll start again.
Yeah,
no,
it's okay.
No, I can't express the importance of connecting with the people around you. And if you don't have family around you, connecting with your own community and the value that has, not only for the maybe the person who's living alone, but also for the community as a whole.
I think that's a really good point too. The wider point, though, about the importance of community, mm-hmm. you know, regardless of age, you know, it could be a, like in this instance, we're talking about older people, but it could be a young family or someone who's moved to the area or come up here for a job or something. And, you know, if you're on your own, it can be really problematic. You need the structures there. Right, so in terms of the service itself and what is the service, Katie, and what sort of commitment do you want from people?
Well, people only really need to be able to commit for about, if it's only one person a week that they're able to see, that's an hour a week maybe of their time that we're looking for. And then it kind of goes up to your own capacity or what you're actually able to commit to. We do provide Garda vetting, so there's no expense put on the volunteer for that. And then we also do provide, well, we call it induction training, but really and truly, we all know the benefits and how to be friendly and how to be listening.
I think it's reassuring for the person putting themselves forward.
100%. It's a community, like the whole thing, like being a family resource centre, we're all about kind of, you know, coming together. So me as a coordinator, I would find it very important to bring the volunteers together, talk about their experiences and how we can make the service as best it can be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's twofold, really. One is to visit people within the home, because obviously with people being a little bit more nervous since COVID about actually leaving the home and that kind of thing, it is a service that's vitally important. But also people who might be more confident to leave the home but might not necessarily have found a reason to go out and about. We will provide as a kind of a coffee and chat service in Cara House, and our volunteers might facilitate that and kind of bring people together, and kind of then they might become more aware of other things that they could get involved in.
It's all very understandable. Mm-hmm. Nervousness and fear post-pandemic, right? Stepping back out is perfectly understandable.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not all justified. And I mean that in the nicest possible way.
Uh-huh.
So that increased interaction with someone outside of the home
mm-hmm.
might actually just reinvigorate the person to step back out effectively. That, you know, the world is a safe and open space and there are things to do. I'm not saying that's going to be for everyone, but that's a possibility as well, isn't it? You know, that people be, we can get a little bit institutionalized, I think, in our lives. And maybe some people are like that. And even just that interaction with a volunteer over a couple of weeks or what have you might be enough to sort of get them back out again.
100%.
There's tons of stuff going on. And there that's is. The one thing in speaking to your colleagues at Cara House, but it's not just them. It's this plethora of organisations that there are around the place. Yeah. More so in Letterkenny because it's a population centre, but on it not exclusively, where there's so much going on.
100%.
There's actually so much to do.
There is. And like you mentioned Letterkenny, and that's a fair point, but there are family resource centres in most towns around the county as well. So for people in the obviously extended Donegal County, like there are opportunities for people to get out and to get involved in things, and like that, it does sometimes to talk about your anxiety or to air it out is to make sense of it in your own mind, and in making sense of it in your own mind, then you're becoming more comfortable with setting those anxieties at ease, and that in itself will bring you out of yourself a little bit more.
For sure. Volunteers can be from all different ages. I presume maybe it's someone who is recently retired, has got a bit more time in their hands. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's someone who's studying and they're younger. This is fantastic for your CV, something future employees look on very favourably, working within your community and volunteering. It really is a fantastic addition to the CV. And anyone in between, you know, 100%. It's open to anybody, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I like that, like since I've maybe started advertising this need for volunteers a little bit more, I've been really pleasantly surprised at the kindness and like that, the variety of ages of people who've come forward and for different reasons that they'd like to get involved. So we've had like mothers whose children are now going to school. I've had school reach out to me kind of to see how their transition year students can get involved. I've been in contact with the hospital and the hospital administrator said there's an awful lot of staff there who might like to get involved. So it's fantastic. And ultimately, it's really warm to kind of see the kindness in people and how people actually really want to engage. So more of that, please.
Yeah. And the truth too is many hands make light work as well, too.
Yeah.
So if you get lots and lots of people that can commit an hour, you know, it can replace those who can't commit necessarily 5 or 6 hours. And there's a reality too in life that we all have to face up to because, you know, we're sitting here now as two young nippers, me and you, right? but we have an aging population and the projected growth of the population of an older age is absolutely huge because thankfully we're living longer and hopefully we're going to live healthier, both mentally and physically. We're also seeing a drop off in reproduction rates to the point whereby we are not actually producing enough children to replace the population now.
Yeah.
So our pathway is that the balance in terms of age is going to tip quite severely to older people. So we could be those in the not too distant future. And it's not all about age, Katie, but we could be those in the not too distant future that could find ourselves being lonely or isolated. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So no harm maybe as a community that we sort of think, well, where's the future of this country and how are we going to support each other and the older people?
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And I like that. I was startled when I was looking at the CSO figures there from 2014 to today, like between 500, like according to the CSO website, 589,000 and 500 a decade ago to 830,000 people over the age of 65 in the country today. So it is a huge difference in the last 10 years.
Yeah, and it's even going to continue going in relation to that. So obviously you know we're talking about people sparing as much time as they have. They don't need to worry about what it's all about because firstly, as in any situation like this, thankfully now people get the guard of vetting because it's reassuring for the person themselves and the person that they're working with or engaging with. But also too, there is that training. And I think that's more about reassurance than anything else, but also letting people know what the parameters are and all that kind of stuff. But then there's also people maybe listening to us who are going, wow. So there's a service that people call out and might have a chat with me because the postman, I don't see him anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I don't get out to the pub anymore because it's closed. And the post office, I get my payments online and the post office has moved somewhere else. So there are people listening to us, Katie, that might also be saying, well, can I also maybe avail of this befriending service as a recipient?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a couple of things about that, actually. Absolutely give us a call in Cara House, and we will certainly look into getting you fixed up either with a volunteer or even just with a phone service, because we will do that as well. We'll check in with people on over the phone. If they're not comfortable with having somebody come out and visit initially, we can do phone conversations for the first while. We do ask our volunteers as well, just something I might mention that's actually quite important is the importance of the relationship. So, like, you know, if you volunteer, you're likely to kind of be looking after the same individual all the time. So there, because that relationship is important. You don't want somebody different. It's not a clinical service. It's a personal service where you build a relationship with somebody. And the more you build a relationship with somebody, obviously, the more you care, the more you invest.
My friend Katie's calling around on Thursday afternoon.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because where it is a service, what we're looking to do is create connections. Mm-hmm. And so, like I say, the telephone service is there as well. And anybody who's looking to get involved or knows anybody who might benefit from this service or can benefit themselves, give us a call. And we do have a couple of volunteers in place at the moment, but we'll do as much as we can for anybody who needs it.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, so get your pen ready if you want to take this number down. So it's volunteers with Cara House befriending service, providing companionship to an older adult in your community and being a friendly listening ear. And the telephone number that you can contact is 074-912-3986. There's a mobile number there as well. 0838 638 315, or you can email befriending@carahouse.ie. Now, you're familiar with our numbers because I probably say them too much. We'll retain those contacts if you want to give us a buzz, and we can read them nice and slowly for you to write down. Okay, listen, Katie, anything else you want to add just before I say slán?
A very final thing as well is we do provide a warm dinner daily delivery service as well. So if anybody's interested in that, you can contact the same numbers. It's €8 a day. So if anybody's kind of struggling to or just it's a bit easier to kind of get the warm dinners in, the cold weather is starting to approach. So if anybody would like to take advantage of that, if you'd like to give us a call about that as well.
All right, Katie, listen, thanks very much. Great
Thank
to see you.
You
again, and continued success at Cara House. As I say, if you want those contact details, either to volunteer preferably, but also as well, if you weren't aware such a service was there and you may wish to avail of it, feel free to contact us as well, and we'll pass on those numbers and email addresses for you. Brian Dawson is Head of Communication and Public Engagement with An Cishan Commission Te Hainn, the Electoral Commission. Good morning, Brian. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. How are you this morning?
I'm doing all right. We have an election looming, of course. It's going to be announced this week, we anticipate. Those who wish to vote, everyone should vote, I believe. But you have to double check that you're registered to vote, your details are correct. And as I say, that window is narrowing, Brian. How do people do it?
Yeah, well, as you say, Greg, when there isn't an election on, you can register to vote at any time. So, you know, there's a rolling register. You can just go online. But once an election is called, deadlines kick in. So what we're saying here at An Cishan Toghchán, which is Ireland's independent electoral commission, is to take the opportunity now to go online. There's a very simple website. It's called checktheregister.ie. And if you go online, you can see if you're already registered, check your details are correct, or if for any reason you haven't registered already, we actually timed it we found a first time voter, and we asked them to time how long it took them to register, and it took them just under 3 minutes that they had their air code and their PPS number handy, and it literally the time to make a cup of tea, Greg.
Life can be busy too, people moving from one bit of accommodation to another, or they've moved out of home or whatever it might be. You want to make sure too that part of your detail is correct.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, maybe you've moved home, you've moved address. Some people may have turned 18 since the last election. Or, you know, it's just you want to just check your details. There is some human error in the system, so it's never any harm just to go, okay, has my name been put down properly? Has my address been put down properly? And that checking can be done also at checktheregister.ie. So what we're saying is we all have busy lives. You know, the school runs, there's work, there's all the things that fill our days. But just take a couple of minutes either today, this evening, go on to checktheregister.ie and then you'll know for sure that whenever the Taoiseach does call the election, you're set to go and you'll have your vote to elect your five TDs across Donegal.
The voting pool's a little narrower, isn't it, for a general election than the most recent local elections. Who can vote?
Yeah, so as you say, it is more restricted in a general election. So you can vote in a general election if you're an Irish or British citizen, you're resident in Ireland, and you're aged 18 or over on the day of the election. And most importantly, as we're saying, you have to be registered to vote as well. So, you know, they're the kind of key criteria.
Mm-hmm. What is the situation? Well, I have some idea of it. If you are away, say you're working or studying away on the day of the election, or you're in, you know, live in a nursing home, for an example, the window's narrower for that cohort of people. Strangely, I don't know why, but people could find themselves missing out. I'm guessing maybe mid next week. Because it's 2 days after the election is called, and then that window closes.
So that you're bang on, Greg. Particularly for postal votes. Now, there's certain groups of people who are eligible for postal votes. So, say people with an illness or disability who are unable to attend their polling station, or maybe, as you said, because of your work, or if you're studying full time in the state, you can't get to your designated polling station. You can apply for a postal vote. And there's some other groups as well, like members of the Gardaí, diplomats, defence forces. So if an election is called, and when an election is called, it's going to happen, the law, the electoral law at the moment says that you only have 2 days to get your postal vote sorted out. Whereas if you start now, if you start today, you have longer, potentially. So what we're saying is... again, just act now. If you think you're going to need a postal vote, maybe because you're studying away from your polling station, or because of your work, or if you have an illness or a disability particularly, just act now. That is a paper-based process, so you can download the forms from checktheregister.ie, but because of the nature of applying for a postal vote, say if you have an illness or disability, you have to get the form witnessed by say your GP. If it's because of your work, you'll be your employer, or if it's because of your studying, it'll be your college or course director.
It's far too convoluted. I'm not asking you to comment on that, but I mean, you know, if someone is in a nursing home, for an example, they've been a political activist all of their lives, to try and get someone to download a form for them, to get their GP to witness where they are, to send the form back. I wouldn't be happy with that at all, to be honest with you.
It is something like ourselves as the Independent Electoral Commission, like it's our job, quite literally, to make it as easy as possible for people to vote who are eligible.
You're dropping the ball in that regard, if you don't mind me saying.
Well, we were only set up in February of last year, and actually it's something that we are now and have our research teams looking into to see, obviously, how these systems can be improved and the kind of recommendations that we want to make to government going forward. But obviously for this general election, if, as all the commentary says, it's going to be called quite shortly, then... you know, the systems that are in place at the moment are the ones that exist.
We have to stick with. All right, listen, well, we did something last week on this to try and encourage people to do that, to make it easier for them. We don't have time to get into how you mark your ballot, but look, if you're going to vote for more than one, use numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I mean, we can get into if you're only putting one name down, an X will do, but it's complicated. Go ahead.
To say that, Greg, we actually have some videos on our website, electoralcommission.ie, that show you the full process of how to vote in the upcoming election.
Brilliant.
From the moment you walk in to the moment you walk out.
Very quick question. My son's studying in Belfast. Can he get a postal vote?
If he's away from his normal polling station, he'll be able to apply for a postal ballot, but he has to act quickly. because, as I say, the forms will have to be signed.
All right, listen, thanks for your time, Brian. We might touch base a little closer to the day, just in case there's anything needs clarifying. Thank you.
Yeah, we'd love to talk closer to polling day again about how easy it is to vote and what to bring with you on the day.
And then we'll have to sort of come to some sort of middle ground on whether we use the Donegal pronunciation of the commission or the southern pronunciation.
I'm from Connemara, so I use the Connemara Irish.
All right, take care of yourself. Thanks very much indeed. Bye-bye. Back with more after the